Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in, folks. It is The Early Line, live right here on Sports Grid on a Monday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined, of course, by Donnie Wrightside. As busy of a 2 hours as you will see here for us on The Early Line. DRS, how you feeling?
Fantastic. I mean, what a week ahead here, Kevin. And did you know this is the last week of March, and also Major League Baseball starts up on a Thursday? But you've got to be kidding me with the amount of basketball we were able to watch this weekend. Coming down to the wire, Kevin. Is 2 hours enough? Maybe not today. Maybe we go extended today. You never know.
We might just have to, because, listen, of course, March Madness delivering. The NBA sneaking in some juice for the people. It really is. Oh, and by the way, baseball, the whole deal. Everything's happening. It's a lovely, lovely time. The Final Four is set, though. Yesterday's action saw San Diego State narrowly beat Creighton. Controversy, if you will, on a foul call late. Was it a foul? Probably should it have been called. That is the debate. But the San Diego State Aztecs move by one, and the U beat Texas. Miami takes down Houston and Texas, with the Final Four being in Houston, Texas. Tough scene. They win that game 88-81.
It is a tough scene overall, and you never want to see these games come down to the wire and be judged, or should I say called by a referee, for one team advancing, but that's the way they were. They were in the balance in the moment here. I question both of those calls, and for the people out there, Kevin, I just want to say this. If you call it that way, you call it the entire way. No, you don't. If you notice in every single sport, let's just take a look at the NFL and college basketball, Kevin, the last 2 minutes are judged differently because they have instant replay to make sure things are correct. That's why they go to the monitor 19 times. So for the people that say it's the same call 17 minutes ago in the game, no, it's not. Their own sports treat the final 2 minutes completely different here.
Yeah, it's true. It's a known thing. It's where the notion of, do you really call that there came from? We'll get into all of that. On Saturday, we saw FAU end the Marquise Noel and Kansas State run, though Noel was still excellent, 30 points and 12 assists in that game. But FAU moves by three, and then UConn. The new favorites to ultimately cut down the Nets continue to dominate every team that they play that is not from the Big East, and Gonzaga was their latest victim. 82-50. Four. Absolute domination here. Andre Jackson Jr. nearly securing a triple-double in the victory.
Fantastic. I mean, UConn, I don't know where they've came from here. We expected great things to start the season for the first part of the season. They disappeared midway through, but they are back in a big way, an absolute wagon here. Now, let me say something here about Florida Atlantic and Kansas State. This game was played in Madison Square Garden, nowhere near these two programs who are not blue blood basketball programs. The Garden was absolutely rocking for this game. It's amazing that we don't get high-level basketball, at least maybe a Final Four or a guaranteed Elite Eight game in the Garden every year. It's where basketball is supposed to be played. It was fantastic to watch, and certainly the fans rose to the occasion in New York City.
They certainly did. I believe, though, that's Rick's job now, right? To make sure that college basketball is alive and well in Madison Square Garden. So we'll see how the Johnnies are able to live up to those expectations. We'll continue to reset the market here for the college basketball national championship. Folks, let's talk a little bit about the NBA, though. LeBron James from the clouds. I'm back. Well, he was doubtful over the weekend. Then he was questionable. Then as a pregame warm-up. And then he comes off of the bench. And I'll be honest with you, folks, that bothered me because that was unnecessary. He still played 30 minutes. And maybe if he started, they wouldn't have lost to the Chicago Bulls 118-108 at home. The radio audience is here on a Monday morning, The Early Line, Sirius XM Channel 159. LeBron comes back. The Lakers lose a pivotal one to go back underneath 500.
Yeah, maybe he's got to go to the LeBron James of winning doctor here as opposed to the feet
doctor.
But that was an interesting one overall. But hey, LeBron, good for you. But I love that, Kevin, I swear to God, the update that hit your phone that said LeBron James has been upgraded to doubtful, probably sent like shivers through the Northeast. Sensational stuff overall. They still lost. Yeah. Come on, LeBron. Yeah, man.
Then again, though, he was a plus four, so it was kind of same old story here. Here's the thing, though. That was not even close to the worst loss that a team had offered up in the Western Conference, the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
We could simply do all 2 hours on this disaster. They lost to the Hornets at home as 16-point favorites the other day. So they went back to Charlotte as 12.5-point favorites, and you would imagine, well, they can't lose again. They lost again! They lost again. They just got swept by the Charlotte Hornets both games as double-digit favorites.
And I guess the only thing I could say, Kevin, is like, sort of from what my timeline is saying, these two superstars can't stand each other and are just looking for a separation over the summer. I mean, that's what's out there right now. I'm just reporting on the facts, man.
Right side sources, man. Right side sources there. Make sure you do double check and verify. Last night in the women's college game, we saw historic action from Caitlin Clark. Iowa takes down Louisville. Caitlin Clark, DRS, a 40-point triple-double. Nobody had ever had a 30-point triple-double in the history of the women's tournament. Just outrageousness here from Caitlin Clark.
Iowa scored 97 points in that game. Let's also remind ourselves, if you watch the opening of it, what is it, 8-0, 10-0 here? Didn't matter to Iowa. They stormed back and took that victory here. That's impressive. If you're talking about the women's game, give me somebody who goes for 41, 12, and 10. That's somebody I want to watch.
Absolutely. So in NFL news, Sean Payton says the Broncos are keeping both of their wide receivers. I'm looking forward to talking about that. But basically, that makes sense. And then lastly, the Yankees are going to let Anthony Volpe play on their baseball team. What a major headline here, Donnie.
Hey, good young player makes the squad. Who'd have thought in Major League Baseball? That's wild.
It's legit. It should never be a headline, but it is. No. Exciting times. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Final four is set. Just four teams left to try and cut down the nets and become the national champions of college basketball. The favorites are UConn. The Huskies have dominated this tournament. They've dominated every single team they've played this year that is not in the Big East, which is pretty good when you get to the tournament. And obviously they keep the conferences apart for a while, and ultimately there is no one else from the Big East remaining. I wonder if the Huskies were watching Creighton's game against San Diego State, rooting on the Aztecs. But I know someone that was rooting on the UConn-Gonzaga game, rooting on the Huskies, and that's our Donnie Wright side here. DRS, before the tournament started, you try to grab a team from each region where you thought the value was, where you thought the best team was. And UConn, the fourth seed in the West region, was not just the best team in the region. They looked like the best team in college basketball. And again, now a minus price to win the national championship.
Yeah, they are actually being priced as national champions right now, which is pretty impressive. But if you also said to yourself, well, what's my longest shot? Marquette and also UConn at 25-1 are the two longest shots I had. And UConn winding up in a Final Four, where they're the market favorite as a four seed, is wild. Every single thing you needed to happen looks like it's happened with every single leg. Mm-hmm. Now, they played some pretty good opponents so far, Kevin. But if you're looking on the horizon here in the Final Four and also the final, let's just say they win this week, which they're favored by about 5.5 points over the Miami Hurricanes. Depending on who they meet in the final, probably at least 5.5-point favorites as well. So it's not one of those where it's like, hey, I just got to cheer on this 25-1 ticket here to come in. It's going to be a tough one in the final because they're dogs. That's not going to be the case if they get there. So I'm feeling confident here at 25-1. I believe you asked me, right? Like, who did you want to get knocked out at this point? I want to say it was maybe Marquette, but certainly having that UConn ticket end because you thought they might have been matching up against, let's just say, Houston or even Alabama on a way to get to the national championship. Not even the case anymore. Looks like clear sailing for UConn, but upsets happen. You're in a Final Four. It's a giant arena. Sometimes you just don't play your best game and you can get knocked out. But my energy meter and confidence level, Kevin, ultra high right now in the UConn Huskies.
And I think the thing for the Huskies, when you look at the remaining crop of teams, right? They're on the 4 line. Miami on the 5 line. FAU, a 9. San Diego State, a 9. UConn, though, does not belong in the conversation with the other three teams of, man, this is some run. I mean, this is pretty magical stuff for them to get here to the Final Four. No. And I'm not going to make this a rant about Iona, I promise. But UConn had no business being a 4 seed. UConn clearly entering this tournament was one of the most dangerous teams in college basketball. As I said on KenPom before this tournament tipped off, 4th overall. Not 4th in the West, 4th overall. That loaded West region, they looked like they would be the most dangerous team. Probably them or UCLA. And the Bruins got pretty banged up and lost a heartbreaker to the Zags. And then UConn punched that team in the mouth. So UConn, more than deserving of their price. They're going to play the Miami Hurricanes. And whenever a team goes on a run, a star emerges. For the U, though, it does feel like that star is Jim Larrañaga. That it feels like the defining character of this team. 17 years to the day that he brought George Mason to a Final Four, he brings the Miami Hurricanes to a Final Four. And maybe this shouldn't be as surprising as it is, considering they were the regular season champions of the ACC, but it was a down year in the ACC. And their conference tournament ended in disappointment, and their big man in Omir was injured, and people thought he might miss the game against Drake. And here we are now, a team that went back-to-back games against Houston and Texas and just ran them up and down the court. That two-game stretch there, DRS, is as impressive a 2 games as any team will put on a resume this year.
You win with guard play. Simple as that, Kevin. You win with guard play. When you take a look at the Miami Hurricanes with Wong and Pack, that's exactly what they did. They didn't panic down 13 points against Texas. They just kept getting to the rim. And you can say to yourself, like, boy, they don't use the three-point shot all that much. Didn't make too many three-point shots. Texas used the three-point shots. You know, you counterbalance that, Kevin. Get to the free throw line, which is exactly what the Miami Hurricanes did, and make your free throws, which they did as well. It was impressive because they never buckled. Texas was in control of that game just about all the way through until we hit that 10-minute mark and you saw the game start to slip away. But being honest here, it's a shame that we don't talk about the Miami comeback, because the one call at the end of the game, which was so crucial, it was Cunningham boxing out Omir, and the call was made where Texas had the frontline position. The call was on Omir, who's going to foul him Mirror out and also send an 87% free throw shooter for Texas to the line with about a minute to go. They probably end up winning that game. And it seems like that's going to cloud everything, because whether or not you agree with the call, it's tough to see that call made in that spot. Let's just say, Kevin, they didn't make any call. Two guys battling for the basketball, both fall down. Whoever comes up with the rebound and you play on would probably feel a little bit beneficial. But depending on who you bet, what side you had, or a fandom, you're certainly going to feel one way or another. But for both of those games to end in a little bit of controversy, it takes away from what those teams actually did. Because let's not forget, as I put yesterday on Twitter, Miami had Texas in a blender late in that game. Miami is the clear, better basketball team down the stretch here and handling their business, but it does get clouded here because you would have liked to seen it play out at least organically, where one team won it on the court, as opposed to, oh no, that call goes one way, God, does it foul out, makes 2 free throws, and away you go with the win for the Miami Hurricanes.
I think, listen, and there's always going to be some tough foul calls. I think that's fair. What blew me away, Miami went 11 of 25 from beyond the arc against Houston. So if they beat Texas, they're going to have to be equally as hot. 2 of 8 from 3 in the win against Texas. Yeah, I never would have believed that stat line existed in a game where they put 88 points up on the Longhorns in a victory. To group these other two teams together in San Diego State and FAU, what stands out to me, again, if I would have told you before the tournament that these two teams or either one of those teams had gone on a Final Four run, wow. I mean, that's probably story of the tournament. How did they end up here? And in some ways, it's very, very appropriate, because we've talked a lot about this season, they're not being a true, clear-cut top four better than everybody else. So, of course, this is a tournament that provides us, you know, higher seeds and teams we didn't expect. But two, I think, people that expected FAU to be here and San Diego State to be here are their head coaches. That's what stood out to me, Donnie, is when you listen to, you know, and they give us a little locker room looking. The energy at FAU and the energy at San Diego State is not, hey, why not us? Or, hey, let's go steal another one. It's, let's see if anybody can beat us. And that belief has been there in the tournament, right? It obviously worked for FDU when they beat Purdue. But, you know, FDU, I think, was honest with themselves. Look, we can steal one. I don't know if we're going to be able to steal two. FAU win, you know, beats Tennessee, and they're like, hey, look, man, three more wins. San Diego State, they're sitting there like, I haven't seen the team in the country that can beat us yet. And then they go knock off Alabama, the number one overall seed. That belief there is the difference, I think, between these two teams, for me, feeling less Cinderella and more like they really belong in the Final Four.
Yes, Kevin, you can also equate this to, right, we always talk about freshmen or rookies. Let's just say rookie in the NFL. After 12 or 13 games heading towards the playoffs, are you really a rookie at that point? You've been through the ringers here of just about a college football season. And it's the same thing can be said here about the tournament itself. Once you get in, the pressure is there. You won in the round of 64. You won in the round of 32. You won in the round of 16. Are you still wearing a glass slipper at that point? No, you expect to be there because you didn't beat your own conference here, per se, as a lower level basketball team or low-level basketball conference going against the Power Fives. You believe that you belong. You're on the biggest stage. You're playing in road environments night to night to night. And also, Kevin, when we talk about like beliefs here, before the Sweet 16 actually began, I remember going over two numbers, the Miami Hurricanes and Florida Atlantic. One was 55-1 and one was 50-1. I believe it was on radio. I asked you, let's take those teams out because they have no chance to win a national championship. Who are the real long shots that would be left? And look at these two teams absolutely balling out with a legitimate chance to cut down the Nets, who you never saw that coming. So, yes, we have counted them out in content. They didn't count each other out, and you're so right about that. They're not going into the locker room going like, man, how can we beat this team? I don't know. Did you see the previous three teams we just beat? That's exactly how we can win this game. Love these underdogs here rolling. Yeah.
I don't know, by continuing to just be better than these teams.
Yeah, exactly.
We keep on beating. Absolutely fantastic. These are the final four that are remaining, but we said goodbye to some really big name teams and some big name players. We break that down after a quick break right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We take a look now at the teams that fell victim to the madness. And obviously, different rounds took place since we last were able to hang out with you here on the Early Line. To go back to Friday, the number one overall team in college basketball, the Alabama Crimson Tide, lost to San Diego State. And there are folks that question whether or not Nate Oates will be able to cross the finish line with his style. Due to the reliance on the three-point shot, people wonder, can you really rely on it in tournament format here? Ultimately, they went 3-for-27 in this game. I don't know if that's a totally fair criticism because, look, sometimes teams just fall short. And Alabama, like every other number one seed here, fell short in terms of an opportunity to make it to the Elite Eight. Donna, you were involved with this Alabama team. Ultimately, they were not able to get where they were supposed to. Do you look at this result as an indictment at all on the style that Nate Oates has implemented here at Alabama?
No, I don't, Kevin, because let's just say if it's VMI, right, or the Citadel, where you go, well, hold on here. All you do is run up the court and fire threes. And sure, if you get hot, you can win a basketball game, but you can't rely on that. Alabama goes, yeah, we know we're going to run tempo. We're also going to be the better defensive team and also the better offensive team along with that tempo and shoot a lot of three-point shots. Isn't this the new analytical age that says if you run fast, shoot at a high number here and play great defense, that's exactly the point? The anti-Virginia where you have to, hey, this game has to go perfect or we might have a chance to lose to no matter what the seed is here. I don't buy that with Alabama. Now, if Alabama came in with that Baylor profile, Kevin, hey, let's get up and down the court, shoot a lot of threes, but play absolutely zero defense and go, huh, we got knocked out of the NCAA tournament. That's really surprising. No, I think Alabama played that brand of basketball this year that should have translated to a legitimate chance at a national championship. And let's also remember, they folded up shop in the second half. Should have won that game. They had the basically double-digit lead there that let it slip away. And if you're asking me from that vantage point going, hey, Alabama's a double-digit lead, and say, wow, they have the tempo in their advantage, the defense and the offense, you should be able to close that out. They couldn't do it. Why is that, Kevin? Your superstars have to step up in the biggest moment. And I'm not talking about, Kevin, they need 30 a night. You just got to be that star that you can get a bucket or two. You can't be that star that goes, hey, you know what? Just didn't have it tonight. That's why Alabama went home.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think that was, now Nate Oates would never say this, but hey, what went wrong? Not, oh, we took too many threes. My first team All-American, obvious lottery pick, was awful in all three games. And I kept trying to harp on this. He scored zero in the opening game against the 16 seed. And we kind of passed it off as, well, they didn't really need him. And that was fine. And then he scored 19 against Maryland, which sounds good until you realize he shot 5 of 17 in the game. And then he went up against San Diego State and shot 3 of 19. Brandon Miller was objectively bad in this tournament. He shot 19.5% from the field and 15.8% from beyond the arc. He shot under 20% from the field and under 16% from beyond the arc. That's where this went wrong for Alabama. And I'm interested to see what this does to Brandon Miller's draft stock ultimately. I'm not telling you he's fallen out of the top 10. Obviously not. But Brandon Miller was really the only true elite prospect that even had the opportunity to make headway here in the tournament. Maybe you could also add Jarace Walker to that conversation. But Victor Wembanyama, obviously, doesn't play in college basketball. Scoot Henderson, obviously, doesn't play in college basketball. The Thompson twins don't play in college basketball. And Cam Whitmore and Villanova didn't make it. Brandon Miller right now, again, no one's getting picked over Victor Wembanyama, but the odds for the number two overall pick are already up on the FanDuel Sportsbook. And Scoot Henderson's a minus 350. Brandon Miller's the second choice in that market. If Brandon Miller was still playing basketball and playing well here in the tournament, I am telling you those odds would grow shorter. Whether you think teams should focus on a three-game sample size or not, that's not the point. They do. They value it. It's going to probably help Marquise Noel find his way on an NBA roster at minimum somewhere in the G League to give himself that opportunity because March matters. And for Brandon Miller, he was not able to step up. Another team that did step up, but didn't step up. What are the expectations? We change it all the time depending on the conversation. And that's the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Gonzaga got to an Elite Eight. And yes, I know. How many teams would trade in the, you know, their last 10 years for Gonzaga's last 10 years? An unbelievable amount. But let's not pretend that Gonzaga is Wake Forest or Washington State. Gonzaga is one of the premier teams in college basketball, right there with Duke and Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina. And that is a credit to them and to Mark Few for putting themselves in that conversation. But once again, they were not able to cross that finish line. And boy, when you consider that UConn is now minus 125 to win the tournament, Gonzaga would have been a favorite over Miami. Decent margin. 3.5, 4.5 points in that basketball game. Gonzaga certainly would have been a favorite if they were able to get to a national championship game over either FAU or San Diego State. But they were not able to get past UConn. And I'm not saying that it means the program is a failure just because they didn't win the national championship this year. But you have to wonder, at which point is this team going to maybe have missed their window? And there's conversation about this team switching conferences out of the WCC. Will that be good for them? Will that be bad for them? That's probably in the eye of the beholder. But I sit here now wondering if once again, you know, Gonzaga missed what felt like such a great opportunity for them to go on this real run here and win a national championship.
Yeah, it feels like they missed their window, right, Kevin, is what we're saying, where maybe the last of the true superstar players is now out of Gonzaga, and that would be Drew Timmy. Now, you never want to say never because Mark Few's a good coach. I mean, Mark Few's the same guy that went to Gonzaga and turned it into an absolute gem, so I can't say that if they go to the Big 12 that he won't be able to survive that. It might even help them in recruiting where some kids be like, well, look, huh? Go to the Pacific Northwest. I get you play good out of a conference, but coach, I don't want to play Pepperdine 19 times in San Diego during the season. Like, I want to get some shine on national TV and get after it on ESPN on a night-to-night basis by playing Kansas State and TCU and some of the bigger names in Kansas. Would love to go into, you know, Rock Chalk Jayhawk and the Fog and see if we can come up with a victory because that expands your national branding and your national highlights where you might now be able to dip into a living room and say, hey, I know you're from, I'm from Gonzaga, but look at the schedule we play now. Each and every night, you're going to be testing against the best players in the country. That might help them. But having said that, here, it was all there for Gonzaga. Now, granted, they ran into a UConn four seed that's probably not a four seed and playing the best basketball of the season. But having said that, Kevin, Let's just say they were escape UConn here, and they did pick up a victory heading into the Final Four, maybe as the favorite to cut down the Nets. This was a massive opportunity that was lost. And Kevin, we preface this by saying so many times in the past, you had Gonzaga with all the pressure on them, a number one seed here, one loss in the season, no loss in the season, superstars up and down that roster, not being able to get it done with the pressure, where maybe you came in as a lower seed going, hey, nobody expects much of us, but boy, look how good we are. And we still have one of the National Player of the Year candidates here that we can lean on. And that was working in their favor here with a couple big wins in the tournament, including before the tournament started, Kevin, St. Mary's wiping them off the court back-to-back games. Like, wow, Gonzaga's got it going on. But it showed where when you get out-athleted sometimes, it just doesn't matter. Timmy was a little bit, this is what you say, where, hey, Timmy could be a really good NBA player. Then you put him up against giants down on the block, and he scores 12 points going 5-for-14 and basically fouls himself out. That's what people look forward to, the projection of the NBA. Not to say Timmy can't be an NBA player, but everybody was waiting for, aha, told you so. When they go up against more athletic teams, they can't handle it.
But also, and look, Timmy has eligibility left. This is a huge decision here for Timmy and for Gonzaga, and what's the best opportunity? NIL money and all those things, could that keep him at Gonzaga? Possibly. But if he doesn't come back, Watson's a senior, Bolton's a senior, Strother has at least NBA looks. I mean, they might lose four to the starting five. And here's the thing with Gonzaga. 2020, they bring in Jalen Suggs, first ever five-star recruit, and it's like, oh, wow. Now they're recruiting at a high level. They follow that up by bringing in Chet Holmgren, and it's like, oh, my goodness. Gonzaga is now going to have elite seniors and every year bringing a five-star? It's not no more five-stars. Not last year, not this coming season. No more five-stars for Gonzaga. Now, like you said, maybe getting to an elite conference could change that a little bit, but that's kind of where we sit all of a sudden now with the Bulldogs, where it's going to have to be done through veteran leadership, and the veteran leadership does seem to be leaving out of the door. We did also say goodbye to our good friends, Princeton, local buddies here, and the conversation is not as much about Princeton, but it's about the change of the tournament here, and that we have now seen three consecutive tournaments feature a 15 seed win multiple games in the tournament. If I had to ask you here today, do you think next year we will once again see a 15 seed not just win in the round of 64, but also grab another victory in the round of 32?
I mean, it could happen now. And you're seeing this trend where, you know, I have to preface it by saying, Kevin, in the late 80s, early 90s, you would watch teams like Kentucky have like 43-point spreads in the first round of their, you know, games. That's no longer the case here. But the reason for that as well, Kevin, let's take a look at the landscape of college basketball. 15 seeds generally coming in where guys aren't one and done and transferring around. Like, they've played together for a while. You look at some of these upper-level seeds, 1, 2, 3, or 4, a lot of freshmen there, a lot of guys leaving. So you're not getting that in the 1990s. Hey, guys are staying for a full 4 years as All-Americans. That's really hard to compete against if you're a 15 seed. It's no longer the case. You have 22-year-olds playing against 17-year-olds, and that could be a big advantage. More 15 seeds will win in the future. You could book that.
And here's the interesting thing for, you know, everyone that loves their brackets. You know, when you fill out a bracket, oh, well, I have to have at least one 12 seed winning, maybe two. All right, I got to make sure I get a couple of 11 seeds in here. I like a 13 seed. Do folks just start ripping 15s now?
And yeah,
that's the evolution, it feels like, right now of March Madness. An incredible, incredible tournament. We will, of course, be talking about it all week long here on the show. But we do make the move over to the NBA with some Western Conference teams that are grabbing our attention. That's next right here on SportsGrid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you right here on the grid. And yesterday's NBA action just caught the eye as per usual. But the Western Conference continues to feel like the story of the league right now. That and the MVP race, which, by the way, today's the day. Nuggets Sixers, hour number two, full dedication, MVP odds moving before the game. Big result over the weekend for Jokic and the Nuggets as they beat up on the Milwaukee Bucks, pulled away late in that basketball game. We're going to get to all of that. But to quickly start, LeBron did come back for the Lakers. And to be honest with you, somewhat unsurprisingly, they lost to the Chicago Bulls. The line upon LeBron coming, before LeBron was going to be announced for this game, was Lakers -6. Then they announce he's in, line's lock, we go to 6.5. And by the time they tipped the ball off, it went to Lakers down to five. It's as if everybody out there was like, oh, you know what? They probably won't win this despite the fact that he's coming back. And I don't think that was a fade of LeBron because ultimately they were up a plus four in his 30 minutes. It's just, you can't have nice things. Also, it does kind of wake your opponent up a little bit if at any point they were going to sleepwalk through this game, although I'm guessing Patrick Beverley wasn't going to allow that to happen, which, considering the most important game, I guess, of his career, was trying to beat the Lakers here, all in all. For the Lakers, I think you can take this game one of two ways. Either, what a disaster of a result, and now should we start to panic about this team, or... hey, LeBron is back. And yeah, they lost, but the schedule remains pretty easy. D'Angelo Russell should be back by Wednesday's game in Chicago, and the Lakers are going to be in a good spot. And for me, Donnie, that's the side that I lean on. Yes, the Lakers will probably miss out on any real chance to get up to the sixth seed, which would have been very nice because you don't have to play in the play-in. But with LeBron back and the schedule that they have, there's no excuse for the Lakers missing the playoffs. I don't care about the 2-10 start anymore. None of that matters to me. The Lakers should be more than fine. It was a disappointing result. But the fact that LeBron came back and scored 19 points with 8 rebounds in 30 minutes in his first game in a full month of basketball, I think it's more positive than negative right now.
Yes, and also, Kevin, let's do a little bit backtracking on LeBron James, where the true sources came out and said, hey, by the way, LeBron James really close to coming back here. Whoa, 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 LeBron says. I don't know where you got that from. I'm rehabbing, but there is no timetable for me. Literally days later, he appears on a court there in prime time going up against the Chicago Bulls. And also, LeBron James after the game. Hey, man, lesser men than me got that surgery. I'm not about that, and I'm going to fight on. So quality LeBron stuff here to try to build up as if he's so injured. He's Willis Reed out here. But the fact that they lost was a little bit demoralizing. But I think he'd hit the nail on the head, Kevin. Let's take a look at the Los Angeles Lakers sitting in the ninth seed. OKC, we're never sure if they're tanking or not. And they might wake up and go, hey, guys, we're only one game up. Boy, we can really get back out of this playoff spot and pick up even better draft picks and get back into the lottery. And then there's the Dallas Mavericks, who knows what they're doing. The Utah Jazz don't want to win. And we're going to get to the Portland Trailblazers a little bit later. It's not for me, Kevin. And I always get back to this point when the joke of all jokes was when you said St. Louis was going to make a wild card in baseball, I told you they stunk and then couldn't explain myself because everybody behind St. Louis was actually worse. When I figured it out, I'm like, man, this is crazy stuff here. I don't think St. Louis is good, but look who's behind them. That's what I'm getting the vibes for the Los Angeles Lakers. Unless they get really injured, which means LeBron gets surgery and AD's groin goes down and D'Angelo Russell can't have that ankle injury again, they're going to be in the playoffs. Because why? Not because they're a great basketball team, because nobody is trying to win behind them.
Well, the thing also for the Lakers here is the schedule that gives them a lot of opportunities. I know we just flashed it up on the TV side. To give it to you again, at Chicago, they will be favorites in that game. At Minnesota, very light line. T-Wolves are playing good. They just beat the Warriors last night. But that's a big game with the team they're competing against. At Houston, listen, come on now. They're going to obviously be favorites in that game. At Utah, they're going to be favorites in that game. They play the Clippers at the Staples Center. That's not a real road game. They do play the Suns, but the Suns are on the second leg of a back-to-back. So I know Kevin Durant won't be playing in that game. Probably Devin Booker and Chris Paul and DeAndre. It's going to be the Lakers versus Josh Okogie. The Lakers are going to be 8-point favorites and down by six going into the fourth quarter. But the Lakers actually could be favored in the game. And then they play Utah at home. The Lakers have a very favorable schedule. Anything other, not just making a play-in, anything other than being in the 7 or 8 spot in the West would feel like a disappointment for me here with this basketball team. But even if the Lakers disappoint, they will not disappoint as much as the Dallas Mavericks. I've continued to bang the drum that the Dallas Mavericks have no business with any of the numbers that they have in the futures market. And, well, the futures market has finally agreed. All it took was Dallas to play 2 consecutive games against the Charlotte Hornets, who, by the way, are not just missing LaMelo Ball, but also Terry Rozier, as well as Kelly Oubre. They basically have nobody left. And the Dallas Mavericks played them on Friday at home as 16-point favorites. They got dominated in the basketball game. They lost 117-109. But then they had to go to Charlotte on a Sunday. You just lost to this team. You couldn't possibly no-show again. Oh, they no-showed again as a 12.5-point favorite, swept They've lost four games in a row. Dallas plays tonight against the Pacers. Is Luka going to play in that game? No. Why? Because it's the back-to-back? No. Suspended. 16 technical fouls. Not great. What about after Indiana? At Philly? Oh, boy. At Miami? Oh, no. At Atlanta? Oh, goodness. This team might lose out. They might lose out and have Damian Lillard, Luka Doncic, and Kyrie Irving all going on early vacations because the Mavericks might just join the Rockets, the Spurs, and, of course, the Blazers, who we'll get to, as teams no longer competing. Luka offering up some comments where he says things just aren't fun. It goes beyond basketball. I don't know if things are more wrong in his personal life. Hopefully not. But he certainly doesn't seem to be happy with where things are. Kyrie Irving is turning on his, fifth, sixth fan base at this point? Because, of course, he is. Look, I respect that the Mavericks tried to move at the deadline to get better. But they got worse. They simply got worse. They misfired, they miscalculated, and they now look like they will miss the playoffs entirely.
Yes, and I think you get around the point here, which is Kyrie Irving coming to this organization and it not working out, because I don't think anybody at the deadline, now granted, there are a lot of people that don't like Kyrie off the court, on the court, who cares? He's a coach killer, he's a team killer, but when that move was made here, we anticipate, okay, Dallas is in the playoff run now. And what I mean by run, Kevin, doesn't mean you're getting to the NBA Finals, doesn't even make it in your Western Conference Finals. It means you're getting in the top six seeds, maybe win a round, and then challenge the next team on a chance to try to get to the Western Conference Finals. That's not happening at all. And if you're reading anything coming out of that locker room here, is nobody is having fun, that's the worst case scenario. These guys get paid millions of dollars. I understand it's a profession for them, but they love to play the game of basketball. Does Luka look like he's loving basketball right now? Now, granted, you wouldn't know by the statistics that he had yesterday against Charlotte because he went up and down the court and did whatever he wanted and cashed ticket after ticket, but there's something wrong with this team. And also, Kevin, from an aspect of, have we ever seen a trade go this poorly right away with a superstar? Oh. It wasn't like you got a disgruntled guy. It's like, you trade me to Dallas, I'm never showing up, and I'll half-ass it the rest of the way until I get out of there. Like, no, Kyrie came. It's like, wow, great, breath of fresh air here. I'm in Dallas. I can't wait to play with Luka. Luka finally has a superstar, and it went completely off of the rails. Can they salvage it? Yes, but if you're looking from an outside person looking in like we are, Kevin, you just said the schedule that they have coming up now. It's not as if you say, okay, we got back-to-back games against OKC at home. You just had your back-to-back games against quote-unquote OKC at home when you played Charlotte. That should have been two easy games where you right the ship, not further sink it like the Titanic. I don't know what's going on in Dallas, but it's bad, and it's one of those, Kevin, where are you more optimistic that they turn it around or they just sink into the oblivion? And I'm more or less saying this team looks like it's sinking and sinking fast.
You know, what a beautiful, beautiful transition, though, you have afforded me here. Even if I had other comments on Dallas. Getting to play OKC at home. The Blazers just did that as double-digit underdogs. Double-digit underdogs. By the way, they won the first quarter by 12 last night against the Thunder. They were trailing at a half. How could that possibly happen? What did Damian Lillard score? Nothing. 0 points. What do you mean? He scored 0 points. Damian Lillard shut down for the season. Do you know that the Blazers got swept by the Thunder this year? Swept 4-0. Man, like how did they end up in this play? Because they got swept by a team that didn't even want to be here. The Portland Trail Blazers have shut down Damian Lillard. And I'll spend some time talking about what this should mean in the far future. But I know that you have been crushing this organization and kind of Lillard and everything that comes with that. And I think this is, again, the most damning moment for this Lillard Blazers run here.
And the best part about it is, Kevin, if you read social media, what's everybody saying with that news coming out that they might shut Damian Lillard down? Oh, they're doing Dame wrong. Dame's got to get out of there. Boy, Dame, you should demand a trade. No. Let's clear the air here. Damian Lillard absolutely chose this. Do you remember last year when Dame, quote unquote, shut it down because he knew the amount of money he was going to get out of Portland and didn't want to risk anything any further? And damn it, if we make the playoffs or not, I want to get my bag. Now he gets his bag this year. He comes out on national podcasts and goes like, hey, man, when did we forget about the regular season? When did we forget about basketball just meaning something and playing your hardest? To fast forward a week later where Dame's like, hey, man, I don't know if I like this anymore. Like, this isn't any fun. And the Trailblazers going, hey, Lloyd, let's shut down Dame because his calf aches a little bit. You guys have been tanking for years in Portland. Your superstar wants to tank. He wants to get paid. He wants to be out of the spotlight. It's us fans typically that say, hey, get Dame out of there. He's a great basketball player. We want to see him play meaningful basketball games. But just like Mike Trout in Major League Baseball, they want this. They don't want the smoke. They want to sit back in Portland. They want to relax. They want to get close to $60 million a year, which is his upcoming salary over the next couple of years, and just relax in the cut. No stress, no pressure. Portland's like, we'll never get another superstar again, Dame. Stay. We'll pay you $100 million to miss the playoffs and shut yourself down over the final month and a half of the season to say next year we'll get after it again. Dame wants this, and Dame is getting it right now. And the simple fact is Portland will continue to pay him because they feel they can't get any other superstars. Stop the madness out here. Portland is taking loss after loss after loss and shutting it down. Kevin, last time I checked, are they 10 games out? Were they eliminated from the playoff race? No. And they're already starting to talk about next year as if it's getting any better. It's not.
Hey, look, you're right. They decided to tank, and Lillard said, cool, sure. And getting a top five potential pick, would that be great for Portland? Yeah, it would. But if you think that Jarace Walker is going to come in and turn the Blazers into a contender, you're insane. So maybe Donnie, maybe you're right. Maybe Dame just wants to sit here and do and just score 35 a night in Portland, but it amounts to nothing. And that's when the Blazers need to step in. In the same way the Wizards should have stepped in and stopped this whole Beal madness. In the same way the Angels probably should trade Shohei Ohtani, or at least Trout, or do something. It is in the Blazers' best interest this offseason to be like, Dame, we love you. We're going to retire zero in 10 years from now. But you got to go. We're taking calls from teams that want to win. Because it's the Blazers cannot possibly think that they are better off next season going out there with Damian Lillard and doing this nonsense again and paying him $60 million, Donnie. They can't possibly think that. And you know teams would still be willing to give up big-time assets to bring Dame to their basketball team.
Think about you owning an NBA franchise, your GM coming in and go, hey, we have the highest player in basketball. And the owner goes, how are we doing out there? Well, we shut him down every year because we stink. You're fired. Get out of my office. Dame's getting traded tomorrow. I'll make it happen.
I like that approach. I like that approach quite a bit, folks. I really, really do. We'll get more NBA in hour number two. We're going to stop by a little Major League Baseball.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sneaking in a little Major League Baseball here. It is opening week of Major League Baseball. Thursday, first pitch for opening day. The Yankees have announced that Anthony Volpe will be on the opening day roster. And here is how ridiculous this sport is. But that is headline news. Because Anthony Volpe has been the crown jewel of the Yankees farm system for, I don't know, what feels like my entire life. I'm surprised he's not like 35 at this point. But nevertheless, the fact that this was even a debate is why this sport often gets a major eye roll out of me. The idea that the Yankees, who want to compete for a championship, are going to potentially start Isaiah Conner-Falefa at the shortstop position who cares? All I know is Volpe's up, Donnie. It's a good thing for the Yankees. We'll now see if he can deliver.
Yes, and maybe you got to pay a little bit more down the line to steal a couple wins. Because, Kevin, at the end of the year, you know what we usually look at? The bottom line and say to ourselves, oh, man, Yankees are a game and a half back of the division. Maybe you could add one of your better players on the roster for the first 3 weeks of the season so he's not a super two free agent in 2040 and you have to pay him at that point here. But getting to the bottom of the point with Major League Baseball, the better player should be playing here. It's the only sport that holds back its better players for fear of, in 15 years, he's still going to be under arbitration and he might have to pay the guy here. But also, Kevin, Volpe is number 77, I believe it's listed. Now, get the guy a real jersey. Let's not even go into Aaron Judge's 99 and how ridiculous that looks overall anyway. So I hate to hijack the argument that we're having here. But my goodness, 77 for a shortstop. Stop the madness at this point. But having said that, Anthony Volpe should be a Yankee. He is a Yankee. And why is it a story that the better young ball players actually can make a roster here? What happened, baseball?
This is the thing. Listen, so you can see, I'm a Yankee fan. I all the slander that they get for the nonsense, a lot of it I don't mind at all. Like, yeah, like their most exciting prospect gets 77 because there's no good numbers left, Donnie.
My goodness.
I mean, that's what it is. What do you want to wear?
Reggie Jackson, take his number down. Give it to him. If he wants to wear Jeter's number, put Jeter on. Would anybody care if Volpe comes out in Jeter's number two? You get a standing ovation. Oh. What the heck? Give him number two.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.